This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast.
We are killing it online.
Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on WSJS.
So glad to have you on a Monday drive. It's WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where we are coming at you live from the Grandover Resort.
It's live action, Tracy.
Site of the National Sports Media Association's annual awards banquet. More on that in just a bit. At 6 o'clock this evening, right as we're getting off the air, the NBA free agency period, where negotiations can start happening between teams and free agents, contracts can be agreed to, then officially signed in about a week. That's when it all takes place. Free agency begins in just a little bit, because apparently the NBA is now a lot like Black Friday, where you get the Black Friday sale before it's actually Friday. You don't have to wait till midnight or the next day. We'll just give it to you the day before. As for hockey, July 1st, tomorrow, middle of the day, noon, 1 o'clock-ish, that's when their free agency opens up. So they're making it so we don't have to be up at midnight expecting contracts to be handed out, and we appreciate them for that. For perhaps the first time in modern history, NHL free agency is much more intriguing than NBA free agency, and it's almost by default. It's an indictment on the NBA's free agency class. Here are the top unrestricted free agents so far that we're expecting to see go to different teams in the next few hours, in the next few days. Indiana Pacers center Miles Turner, Brooke Lopez, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, DeAndre Ayton, Caris LeVert, Clint Capella, Mo Wagner. Those are the top names. And it's because LeBron James picked up his player option. Chris Middleton did the same. Hashtag Pro Deke, John Collins did so with Utah. Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Naz Reid, they all signed contract extensions to remain in place. Fred VanVleet did the same thing as well. So that's the free agency class that we're looking to see signed in the next few hours. Malik Beasley would have been one of the bigger names. He's being investigated for sports gambling. He's being investigated by the feds right now, something that should probably scare off any teams that were interested in him. So that's the NBA. Meanwhile, the Carolina Hurricanes, they are big game hunting right now. They are the current favorites to win the Stanley Cup, according to... according to FanDuel Sports, they are the favorites to win the Stanley Cup, and they have a ton of cap space to make some moves. Sadly, the player who would have made the most sense for Carolina was just inked to a long-term extension with Florida over the weekend, Sam Bennett. But there are a handful of players that could make a splash. Carolina could make a splash by signing. Mitch Marner is the most obvious name from Toronto, coming off a 102-point season. But what contract he's going to be commanding, and after what Carolina just dealt with by bringing in Mikko Rantanen and that circus, and seeing how little interest he had in coalescing to the Carolina Hurricane system versus finding a team that is willing to adapt their system to the player, Mitch Marner probably not going to be a fit. That is the biggest name on the market, though. That is the splashiest move Carolina could make up front. So, if not him, who? Keep an eye on a couple of wingers. Brock Boeser from the Vancouver Canucks. Nick Ehlers from the Winnipeg Jets. Late 20s, in their prime, coming off 20-plus goal-scoring seasons. 50, 60, 65 points apiece last season. Trending upwards. Those are the kind of guys Carolina needs in order to bolster what they already have and turn into that Stanley Cup contender they are expected to be. For all these reasons, perhaps for the first time in what we can remember, NHL free agency more intriguing than the NBA. Until the Hornets traded for Colin Sexton, we started to think maybe Chris Paul comes back to Charlotte and finishes his career here. He's one of the most noteworthy free agents because of what this class is. On X, at Josh Graham Show and at WSJS Radio, that's where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and Twitch. Will Dalton, he's the executive producer of this show, and you're not going to be here the rest of the week.
Yeah, I'm going to be chilling, taking a whole week off.
Well, not a whole week. You're here today.
It's good enough. Good enough.
So for that reason, we will not have live streaming video from Tuesday through the end of the week, Friday being the 4th of July. Tomorrow, I will not be with you either. It will be our morning host, Jeffrey Griffin, that is hosting the program from Triad Today. A congrats to Jeffrey Griffin for winning the annual Reader's Choice Award put out by the Winston-Salem Journal. So that's really special. Congrats to him, and appreciate him stepping into our chair tomorrow and pitch hitting for us. Speaking of awards, we are at the National Sports Media Association's annual awards banquet, and this organization is both special and it's local. Every year that we do this show, every year that we talk about this event, we get the emails, we get the response from people saying, I had no idea that this was in North Carolina. I had no idea that this existed. It's almost as if it's still a secret. And it's a secret that we're trying to get out because we want as many people to experience this that love sports in this area. The same people that listen to us every day would love to be here at the Grandover Resort watching what happens tonight. There's so much history associated with this organization. The first national winner for the NSMA was in 1959, Red Smith, recognized. One of the great, biggest names in the history of sports media. Jim Murray, the legendary writer most known for his work in Los Angeles, won 10 straight times in the 60s and 70s. Frank DeFord, Sports Illustrated. Peter Gammons, winning several times in the 80s and 90s. Rick Riley after that. If there's a big name in sports media, they've been recognized in the state of North Carolina at this event. And the great names of today's sports media, they are here today. Guests on today's show, Mike Tirico, Ken Rosenthal, national winners. Anish Schraff's going to join us in about 5 minutes, the voice of the Carolina Panthers. Recognized alongside Tripp Tracy and Luke Dukak. Outstanding show that we're going to have because of those great guests who are dropping by. But the local nature of this event, that's what makes it special. It was in Salisbury for nearly 60 years, then in Winston-Salem for close to five, and then it was right here in Greensboro. And given the fact it's a nonprofit, it's also something that needs to be supported as well. So I direct you to nationalsportsmedia.org to learn more about the event, to be a part of events such as this, to support it if you have someone in your family interested in sports casting, if you're just a sports fan and want to be around the people that tell the stories. The NSMA is for you, and we're very happy to be here. The co-North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year is Carolina Panthers play-by-play man Amnish Schraff. He is a first-time North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year winner, and he'll be joining us next on The Drive.
Let's get the show going!
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
I need to give a shout-out while I have a minute to Spencer Tomsett, who is an up-and-comer in the industry, works really hard, gets people plugged in here at the NSMA. He has, the last few years, Will, taken offense with the fact that I don't veer away from conventional Pop-Tart flavors.
Yeah, I take offense to that, too.
So he brings me different Pop-Tart flavors. And what he has brought me is the Frosted Marshmallow Hot Cocoa flavored Pop-Tart here.
I've had that. That's good. It's good.
I'm not opposed. I'm not opposed to it.
Did you try any?
He had another one that I was absolutely vehemently against. It's behind us here, now being joined by Anish Raff. I bet you he's with me on this. I could be wrong, you know. We'll never know what happens in live radio. But someone from Alabama just dropped off frosted marshmallow hot cocoa Pop-Tarts. And I don't think that that's something I want to try. But how about you?
You know the story.
You are the voice, the former voice of the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
You know the story. Prior to the Pop-Tarts Bowl, I had never had a Pop-Tart.
Wow. So how many flavors have you dabbled in since?
I've had a few since. I've had a few, but prior to the Pop-Tarts Bowl, that was part of the gag. I had never tried a single Pop-Tart.
Is your wife Faye into Pop-Tarts too?
She's had them at least.
Okay, got it. So
she shops at all the healthy places, so we unfortunately do not find Pop-Tarts in the pantry.
Let me give you a proper introduction. You are the voice of the Carolina Panthers. You are the co-North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year with the NSMA. You've called yourself a North Carolinian for how long, Anish Raff?
It'll be 14 years this fall.
And now, voted on by your peers, you are deemed the North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year along with Tripp Tracy. How does that hit you?
Well, first, congratulations to Tripp, who does a great job with the Hurricanes. You've been doing this for a long time. Uh-huh. You know it's not just the person behind the mic and in front of the camera. And with the Carolina Panthers, I've been incredibly fortunate to step into a situation where I was surrounded by great people and am continued to be surrounded by great people. Our producer, David Langton, Jim Zoki, Jake DeLome, Luke Keekley, Eugene Robinson. I can go on and on and on. Guys like Harold and Jason behind the scenes. So I always feel awards like this, recognition like this, is a product of what we do collectively.
Getting to the Carolina Panthers, Teteroa McMillan has been a lightning rod of interest. And it happens when you're a wide receiver that gets added. But being a top 10 pick, that's the highest any receiver's ever been selected by the Panthers. And last year there were three rookies that finished top 10 in the NFL in receiving yards. One of those a tight end in Brack Bowers, but the others, Ladd McConkey, and it was Malik Nabers.
Yeah, Brian Thomas had a really good season too.
He did. So what's a realistic place to set expectations for Teteroa McMillan, given how high he was selected?
You know, it's fascinating because I think at some point we are sometimes collectively prisoners to the draft position. And so if you're a first-round pick, you have a longer leash. Do we look at a Jalen Coker differently had he been drafted in the first three rounds versus him being undrafted?
I think
right?
so.
And so there's never a recalibration of expectations based on what the player actually is. It always defaults to where that player was drafted. I think in McMillan's case, watching a lot of his clips at Arizona, I did a few Big 12 games this year, so when you go back during the week and you're watching tape, Arizona popped up quite a bit, and there were a bunch of moments where I'm going, whoa, one-handed catch, incredible body positioning, like a Russian contortionist at times in midair. He checks off all the boxes, and now he's going to play with the best quarterback he's ever played with. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's considerable upside. It's a further investment in an offense that already brings back a lot and an offense that played well as a unit without McMillan over the last half of last season.
The only area I look at for the Panthers that I don't know if they're going to be better than where they were a year ago is edge rusher. I don't know that yet. You did draft a guy in the second and third round. You do bring DJ Wonnum back, and he should be more healthy than he was a year ago, you hope. But when you remove Jadeveon Clowney from the situation, that it's just an area of I don't know. And when I say that, it isn't I know they're going to be worse, as some people use that term. That's just the one spot. Derek Brown, interior D-line, how they invested in it, feel confident that's going to be better. J.C. Horn, Mike Jackson, that combination. Trayvon Merrick, that's the player that they love the most that they've brought in on defense, it seems. Offense, you already mentioned the investment. So what's the case for the edge rushers potentially taking a step for Carolina, that pass rush taking a step?
Well, one, a full season of Wonnum is not insignificant. He made a huge difference when he came back into the lineup. It freed up Clowney a little bit. You go to the game against the Chiefs. The Panthers had 5 sacks on Patrick Mahomes in that game. The guys they drafted, Umanlian and Skort, again, rookies. I'm not going to place a great heap of expectations on them right away, but Panthers had high grades on both those guys. They had a first-round grade on Skort. Again, if you're trusting the GM, you're trusting the scouting, they feel there's something there. And then you still have guys who might be playing for a roster spot who are going to have an awful lot to prove, a DJ Johnson potentially, and Amari Barno coming back from injury. So I think the prevailing sentiment was, yes, they were going to go use that eighth pick or trade that eighth pick to go get a pass rusher, whether it was Jalen Walker or somebody else. They went and doubled down on offense. Do I think it will be a question mark when you have so many unproven guys, a guy coming off injury and rookie? Sure, it will be. But overall, again, Derrick Brown coming back, and you hit his name right away, that opens up a lot of things because he commands so much attention. And don't forget A'shaun Robinson last year had 5.5 sacks for the Panthers, again, playing in that 3-4 front. So maybe they have to get a little creative with the pass rush, but I think – part of the issue last year wasn't so much running, rushing the passer. The issue was they couldn't stop the run. And so there weren't enough opportunities to get to the passer. If you're in 2nd and 2, you're in 3rd and 1, you can't dial up blitz packages. I think so much of what they wanted to do on defense was neutered last year because of a historic inability to stop the run. They should be much better against the run just with Derrick Brown coming back. Forget about, you know, Wharton and some of the other guys they added.
What did it tell you about the way things are run now, that despite what the numbers pointed to a year ago, they bring Ejiro Evero back?
I think if you look at it rationally, the calculus going into last year was we have to find out what we have in the quarterback. Defensively, there wasn't a lot of depth. Everybody knew that going in.
Free agency, they didn't invest in it. The draft, a lot of offensive investment, it seems like.
And if you look at the team from last year, had they had good health on defense, they would not have been as bad as they ended up being. Once they got hit, not with just one, but multiple significant injuries, Shaq Thompson, Derrick Brown, Clowney was on the injured list every week. He missed a few games. Wonnum was out. You go up and down the lineup, they were playing guys who were practice squad guys. They were playing guys who were discarded by other teams throughout the season. Hard to judge a D coordinator when you have so many moving parts and so many guys who, let's be honest, probably weren't ready to be playing on Sundays. Now you have more depth, and they have doubled down with depth, especially in the front 7. And it speaks to me that there's a belief in Adro.
The part that was annoying is the instant amnesia of it, where it's – I mean, people were acting like he wasn't terrific his first year, making something out of nothing. It's like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. What? Where were you in 23?
When the team couldn't score and the defense was managing to keep them in a lot of these low-scoring games for a half, for 3 quarters before they just got worn down.
Yeah. Anish Raff's with us here. Mike Tirico gave us a tip earlier saying that he was in the gym and that Anish was putting in more work than he was putting.
You know, Mike's got an excuse because he's coming off an Achilles.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw him, and he was telling me he was coming off an Achilles, and so he had to get his rehab work in. I'm just trying to, you know, keep up.
Here, that is a hallmark, by the way. This is your first time at the NSMA, yes?
Yeah, it is.
A hallmark, it always seems to go back to, like, what your workout regimen is. Like, I will never forget. I don't know if Will Dalton was there. It was me, my wife. It was Ernie Johnson and his wife. And all of a sudden, Peloton just came up, and people were talking about what their PRs were, and that was the entire night. I don't know what it is. Are you a Peloton guy?
I have a Peloton. My wife's laughing over there because she knows I don't use it as much as I should.
Okay. How do you approach the Peloton? See, I made this mistake of trying to, like, you know, find people to do asking Randolph Childress, for example, what his workout regimen
was. Yeah, and then he's going to run by you.
Resistance is 65, and that's where we're going to stay for the next half hour.
Yeah, he's going 80 to 90 with resistance 55 plus. I have my Peloton set up strategically.
Oh, I'd love to hear this.
So I've got two TVs in front. So what I try to do during football season a lot of times, I'll be up in the man cave and I'll be on the Peloton and little contraptions where you can put your laptop or you can bind your notes.
In front of you while you...
In front of the Peloton. It just attaches on, right?
Oh.
So a lot of times I'll watch tape, I'll watch games, and then I'll probably get a workout in. I wouldn't call it a real workout because at some point you get lost in the game. So
no
they're
sound?
Telling you...
No sound?
There's a little bit of sound, but you'll be going... Let's say you got to hit 90 to 100 or 80 to 90, and you're supposed to be going 40 to 50, whatever it is, right? And then I'll look down, oh, 28. Okay, I should probably turn it up a little bit.
Anish, this goes without saying. This is an award that is voted on by your peers.
Yeah, that means a lot.
And it's well-deserved. You've always been great to us. We greatly appreciate that. What are you most looking forward to tonight? Do you know what to expect?
I don't. I want to enjoy it. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of great people and award winners from other states, writers, broadcasters. I'm hoping we get to hang out a little more.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that, you know, you meet some good people. I enjoy talking to a lot of the young guys who were, you know, making their way around yesterday at the banquet, trying to soak up as much knowledge as they could. We were all in their shoes at one point, so it's kind of nice to see that hustle as well.
Go to nationalsportsmedia.org to learn about the NSMA. It is a nonprofit. There's a lot of really neat things that they do. Anish Roff, enjoy the night. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Josh.
Your attention, please. It's your time.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
John Gruden received another local box over the weekend. It came from Jake Dicker and Wake Forest football. These videos are just treasure troves because of how passionate John Gruden is about anything John Gruden happens to be doing
at that moment.
Is that Jake Dicker?
That's just facts.
We do have a drop from the Breakfast King of the Midwest himself, the new head coach of Demon Deacon football. So let's dig into what John Gruden dug into.
Wake Forest is a hell of a place. It's in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And remember Norm Snead, the quarterback of the Eagles? Old school Kelly Green helmet. Norm Snead played at Wake Forest. So did Sam Hartman. Arguably the best-looking quarterback in quarterback history.
We've detected it. We've detected where the humor is with Gruden. There's something strangely sensual about the way he talks about football, where he gets a little bit too excited when talking about prospects, and it revealed itself right when he noted the actual good looks of Sam Hartman there.
Act like you're throwing a bomb.
Hey, act like you're throwing a bomb. I want you to touch your toes. Spider 2, why banana? And then he had some thoughts on Wake Forest's mascot.
You know what their nickname is? A Demon Deacon. It's this guy. Looks like he has a Nerf ball head. He wears a bow tie, a tuxedo, a top hat. One of the coolest mascots in all of football, period. The Demon Deacons.
Does he look like he have a Nerf ball head? Does he? Nerf ball head? That's how we would describe the Demon Deacon?
I mean, it's a lot of foam, so I guess that's what he's getting
Maybe.
At.
Maybe. Sure. You're not going to talk about the stapled...
Do you think
bow tie to his chin? We're not going to talk about that at all? And how dashing he looks in a suit?
Yeah, I get the Nerf ball analogy. I get it.
Then he branched out and decided we need to start talking about other sports.
But the most famous of all time, the most famous Demon Deacon, didn't play football, didn't play basketball. He played golf. Arnold Palmer, man! Arnold Palmer played at the weight. Look at this, man. You believe that? You imagine Arnold Palmer walking around Winston-Salem? All right, I'll take a couple boxes of Titleists.
Quite an impression of Arnold Palmer there at the end.
It's so excited.
Does anybody have the heart to tell John Gruden that Wake Forest was still in Wake Forest, North Carolina, and not Winston-Salem when Arnold Palmer was there? Or does that make me a nerd?
That makes you
for
a
having
nerd.
That type of
that absolutely makes you
correction.
A nerd.
As somebody who grew up 10 minutes from where the original Wake Forest campus was in the city of Wake Forest, that is an important distinction. They have a place that Arnold apparently frequented quite a bit that I loved called Shorty's Hot Dogs in downtown Wake Forest. And they were known for having the red dogs, Will. They were red, like a bright red hot dog at Shorty's Hot Dogs. So, yes, those were some of the highlights from John Gruden receiving a Wake Forest box. Now, let's get into a jam-packed edition. You want to talk about jam-packed show, hashtag jam-packed show. How about hashtag jam-packed Graham's grades for this Monday?
Every week is a test for your favorite sports teams.
Is this a test?
Who passed the test?
I don't know.
Who dropped the ball?
I don't know.
Josh Graham has the answers.
What?
Time for Graham's grades.
The good, the bad, the meh. From what we saw over the weekend. And let's start on a very positive note.
A.
The best. This is an encouragement to watch on YouTube, Twitch, and on X. Because the only thing I can make an A is the best video that I saw all weekend. And it is Ed Orgeron at a Louisiana wedding. And it goes about as beautifully as you could imagine it goes.
Go Tigers and roll away!
He is taking off his shirt as a Louisiana version of Wipe Me Down plays. And now he shimmies after taking off his shirt. That is a TikTok video. WD, a roll Tigers and roll go wave. Tigers. Go wave.
Go Tigers.
I can't stress enough how much of an A++ that is. The musical selection, Ed Orgeron's willingness at every turn to pop that top off.
Go Tigers.
Love that man. I wish someone would hire that man.
B.
USA soccer win. Now, they win the match. Freeze wins the game for the United States with three stops and penalty kicks, which is almost unprecedented at the international level to get that many stops in a single penalty shootout. It required six kicks apiece. But it's still just Costa Rica, it's still just the Gold Cup, and there isn't, because of how damaged, how bad it looked at its worst over the last few years, obviously with the last World Cup, it's hard to have a lot of optimism for the Americans' chances as hosts next year and about the direction of things. If they win the Gold Cup, different conversation, winning a couple more games, that's why it's a B, because it still is very positive. It was an exciting game in Minnesota. But going beyond that feels like a stretch.
C.
The Hornets Colin Sexton trade. What was your read on this? Because, okay, you bring in Colin Sexton. He's a backup point guard. It's another guy who's going to add some shooting. Just had a 41% three-point shooting season. But you just traded away Yusef Nurkic after trading away Mark Williams and Nick Richards and You already brought in a bunch of guys who shoot the basketball and play no defense. Con Knipple, Liam McNeely, now Colin Sexton. It's like, when is the defense going to come, and when are the centers going to arrive is my question.
See, I took this as like, oh, like that might be your starting two right there. Which is interesting because I thought...
Who do you bench?
Well, I don't know.
That's not your starting two. That's your backup point guard.
Okay.
Because you're not sitting Brandon Miller.
No. I honestly wasn't overly moved by the move.
That's why it's a C.
Yeah, I guess that is why we would do that, isn't it?
D.
The Atlanta Braves weekend. They got beat 13-0 on Friday, Will. Did you see what happened with the Orioles, by the way, this weekend?
No, I didn't.
They were trailing 6-0 in the second inning on Friday. Remember when the Orioles were down or leading 8-0 and blew the lead? Well, they were down 6-0 to Tampa, and they won the game 22-8. Because baseball karma.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday, the Orioles get beat 11-1. Yeah. Win on Sunday, so they did take the series. Atlanta's the D because you're at home, you're playing Philly, you led early on in yesterday's game, you squander it, you lose 13-0. You really need to start getting back into it, and it just doesn't seem all that optimistic in both the Atlanta and Baltimore corners. It's something we want to ask Ken Rosenthal about when he joins us next hour. Which of those two teams could you see really getting back in that mix?
F.
Can only be one thing. The death of Dave Parker, Pittsburgh Pirates legend, friend of the show, was on with Darren Vaught when he filled in once upon a time. One of the coolest players to ever play Major League Baseball. Part of the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates, and had a missile of a right arm and right field. Dealt with Parkinson's for the last 10, 15 years of his life. And what makes this such a gut punch is he was inducted into the baseball, or selected for induction for the Baseball Hall of Fame in January. And he was supposed to be inducted next month in Cooperstown. So I hope wherever he is, he feels the love from the baseball community, the baseball world, next month in Cooperstown, even though we lose Dave Parker over the weekend. And it's also worth noting that a good way to pay tribute to the ultimate bopper, Pittsburgh, with a combined aggregate of over 30-plus runs and allowing just 5, handling its business this weekend. Unfortunate headline with Dave Parker. First guest in Greensboro at the Grand Overs, Mike Tirico, going into the Hall of Fame at the National Sports Media Association Awards Banquet. You get a speech tonight. What's one thing that you're wanting to convey during that message amongst your colleagues tonight?
So, from what I understand, the format has changed. Wes Durham interviews us.
Oh, even better.
So it's a lot of pressure off. I didn't have to make a speech, which is a right one, which is great. Just better thank the people who came with me here this week and family, and make sure I knock that out. But I'm so excited to be here. I would say if there's anything to convey, it's damn, I didn't think I was this old. I'm a little taken aback by the Hall of Fame tag, because I always associate that with people who are done with their careers, and I hope I'm not done, at least this year. We've got an exciting year coming up, but it's been a great run, and we're in the middle of a very special part of it at NBC, and I'm just so blessed to be around so many good people and to be down here this weekend. What the organization does and Dave Gorin's put together is pretty special for all of us.
Here is a place that you did arrive, Mike. When you call an event, particularly in football, It's a bigger deal, because in North Carolina, they're the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of research today.
Okay.
Do you know the last time you called the Carolina Panther game? Because when you call NFL now, it's either Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football, fans circle.
That's an amazing question. I don't think I've done a Panthers game while I've been at NBC. So it's going to have to be the year after the playoff game at what was then Bank of America. Oh, man, I don't remember what game it was.
The
Colts? So I did a Cardinals-Panthers playoff game in Bank of America on a miserable day, and it was a terrible game, to be candid. But Ron Rivera got that group to overachieve and win and all that stuff. Is it the next
the
year?
The answer is a rainy night, the Colts playing the Panthers.
Oh, my gosh.
The Super Bowl season 10 years ago.
10 years. Is that it's insane.
See, that's crazy.
I just saw Anish Sharaf in the gym. Anish was working out harder than I was.
He'll be with us next hour.
Good. We were just chatting about college football, and, you know, I started thinking of Anish and a bunch of the other Syracuse alums who are NFL play-by-play announcers. I think we got like five or six that are voices of teams around the league. But I'm so proud of Anish and all those folks. But I kind of laughed. I was thinking, like, man, I talked to Dave Canales at the owners' meetings for about a half hour. I had a great time. Had a great visit about Bryce and all this stuff. But I haven't seen them in forever in person. So thanks for giving me that answer. That has now inspired me to go back and check the last time I did every team in the NFL. Just to see how long has been the longest drought for me.
But that's something. Yeah. When you call a NFL game, that's the ones that
nice,
people
yeah.
circle on schedules. Mike Tirico is with us here. It's been a while since you've done NBA as well. But
yes.
Starting next season, you'll be back. A lot of people associate your voice with the NBA. When's the last time you called an NBA basketball game?
So it would have been May of 2016. So
wow.
9 full years. However, I didn't want to go into next October as an unknown. When we start the NBA on NBC, we'll have new production team together, the old music, of course.
Michael
Ground
Jordan.
Ball Rock. Michael Jordan's going to join us as a special contributor during our coverage during the year. We'll have Reggie Miller and Jamal Crawford. Grant Hill has just been announced. Noah Eagle is also going to do play-by-play. Maria Taylor's going to host in the studio. We're going to have Carmelo Anthony as one of our guys on the desk, along with Vince Carter. So we got a lot of great folks. But it's all unknowns because a lot of us are new to this project. I didn't want to be an unknown and say I haven't done an NBA game in 9.5 years. How rusty am I going to be, or will I remember where all the Easter eggs are hidden? So I did two games this past March. NBC owns the regional networks in Philadelphia and Boston. So Kate Scott, who does the Sixers, and Drew Carter, who does the Celtics, were kind enough to let me sit in and do a game of each. So I did
wow.
a Sixer. They were both against Portland. So it was great. So I had three teams to prepare for. But I got to kick the rust off a little bit and do a game. So at least I've got that answer that I still know, like, what's a two-pointer and what's a three-pointer.
Mike Tirico is with us here. I remember being at the 2022 Final Four, and Duke was playing North Carolina in New Orleans. And we were catching up with Tracy Wolfson.
Huh?
And she's called everything under the sun, the Super Bowl, you name it. And I remember her saying, I never thought I'd get a chance to call a Duke Carolina game
because
of how protected that property is. Is there still that great white whale for Mike Tirico, an assignment or something that you haven't had a chance to be there for?
You know, I've been lucky. During my ESPN time, I got to do some SEC games, not like a night game in Death Valley or something like that. Did a game at Bama, so covered that in college football. College hoops, we bounced around. The ESPN time helped me check most of those boxes. To be honest, the boxes that were unchecked for me were all NBC properties. Kentucky Derby, Olympics, and the Indy 500, which we ended up getting. So getting to work all of those were a big deal personally for me. So I've kind of been able to work everything. There's nothing sitting out there that I say, gosh, I've never done that. Australian Open Tennis is the only slam I've never done. PGA Championship is the only golf major I've never done. So would I love to say I've done all four? Yeah, but I mean, we're just kind of nitpicking at this point. I've gotten to most of the majors, but it does work out sometimes depending on where you are and where the rights are at that moment.
What is your fondest memory calling sports in North Carolina? We saw you last year
Pinehurst,
at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, that was something. That last couple of holes with Rory and Bryson were memorable. Like, you could feel like the tension building and just kind of building up inside of you. And then I finished my call on 17, got out right outside of our booth, which was to the players' left down the 18th, and got out and snuck around the booth to go do the trophy presentation, and was, you know, right across the fairway as Bryson hit that bunker shot, which would be one of the great ones. And then this year I was on the green when J.J. Spawn made his putt at Oakmont at the U.S. Open. So, like, to be, you know, one of the couple hundred people within that shouting distance of those moments is pretty cool. But that Carolina-Arizona playoff game will stick in my brain forever. because that was the first NFL playoff game that I got to be a part of.
Wow, you had never called an NFL playoff game before then.
We had not. We had Ryan Lindley as quarterback for the Cardinals.
And the Panthers were an under 500 division champion.
That's right. So that, I was like, look, we waited all this time for this, but it turned out to be a member. Obviously, I still remember a lot of it.
Cameron, the Smith Center, you've spent time at either of those places?
I called Steph Curry playing at Cameron. How about
this would have been 2006 or 2007. I think that would have been my first time ever going to Cameron. I was there that night, too, as a youngster. I think it was my first time there.
What a small world. Games there. Did a few games at the Smith Center. There was an ESPN run where I had been doing Big East at that time, when the Big East was still whole, that I spent most of December and January bouncing around to other buildings to do a game at Pauley, do a game at Kansas in December, non-conference games, just to experience them. And to get Steph in Cameron Indoor playing against Duke was really cool.
Mike Tirico, congrats.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing this.
What a pleasure. Good to be with you. Thanks for having us.